Welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship.
So that segues us right into our next segment. Greg Weir, W-I-E-R, gregweir.com. He has worked in security. He's done a number of things in his life. He's pretty amazing. He's had many ups and downs. Welcome to the show, Greg. We want to hear your story, and we were talking about security in the last segment. How did you start? I know you got married right out of high school.
I did.
And you probably weren't rich then.
Absolutely not. No.
So what is your story?
Mine was just a matter of knowing you had to do something to make something yourself. Some people dream it and some people do it. I was one of those guys that always thought that if you do it, kind of follow the routine of education, you know, from post-education out of high school into college. I mean, although I couldn't afford it, I didn't have any money, so that was the choice, wasn't really an option. But I thought, you know what, if I can find something to do, I'll be the best at it. So I literally went out and got a job making $4 an hour as a security guard and kind of learned everything I could about the business. I took every job, every account, and I got to know people. And I learned early on the power to business is relationships. And then I spent about 11 years with an international company, learned a lot, and I decided to actually move here to New York or stay in Detroit. And I chose to stay in Detroit and left that company, and I went into my own business. It was tough. I didn't realize, making payroll every week was a problem. It was quite the hassle. Some of the things I never had to deal with before. But once you get past that, just do what you say you're going to do. Do it consistently. And, you'll find out that once the customer learns that about you, they'll stay with you. So I was fortunate in my, 40-year or 29-year career but I'm on my own. I probably kept 95% or more of the customers I had from day one. Because we did what we say we're going to do. And then from there, it's just doing strategies, developing good people. I mean, you're only so good and you're only one person. So along the way, you have to develop people and to get loyalty and they have to work hard for you. They have to trust each other. And I think once you do that, it's really, I don't make it sound simple, but those are all kind of the ingredients to becoming something and somebody. So taking something from absolutely nothing and turn it into a fortune using those basic ingredients.
And it was more than just luck, right?
It was absolutely more than just luck.
Which is the name of your book.
It is.
Well, I love your story because it shows that America is still a place where you can start anywhere. And, with a lot of perseverance and fortitude, you can achieve a lot. You can achieve your goals. And so I was looking through the show notes here, and it says that you faced betrayal, business collapse, and even attempts on your life.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, who tried to kill you?
Business partners. That's where I form my opinions from.
No wonder you don't want any partners.
Well, our revenue base, starting off, you have nothing. And you have a dream. And then over time, you build it. I personally have built over $1 billion a year in my lifetime career. About $1 billion, too. And along the way, people, you start collecting money. You start collecting cars and houses and vacations, and they see you're in their way. So there's one particular partner. I went to it's in the book, with the Lake Cumberland, a houseboat party, like a company getaway for the weekend in Kentucky. And we're on wave runners, and I flipped one. Anybody that knows boater safety is hands up in the air, things flipped over, don't go near the area. This guy went right at me and just ran me over. And
on purpose?
On absolute purpose, yes.
Who was he?
A business partner. Who, what, the name?
No.
I'll give the name to you. It's in the book. But I didn't have them back, but that's just what people do. Another time, I've been another business partner. He started doing side deals, something I was against with his drug partner. So I go to Florida. We had an office down in Fort Lauderdale. And I had this gut feeling, don't stay in this room. So I was at the Holiday Inn on the ocean, and I moved about a mile down the road. I go back the next morning, and the room's absolutely ransacked and tore apart.
They were looking for you.
They were looking for me, of course, because the dollars are so high. I mean, in the security guard business, it's a multiplier. So if you have a $50 million a year company is what I sold, it's worth a lot of money.
Your life is like an action movie, I swear.
The whole thing was. So looking at it, being the best in that industry, I probably was and probably still the best in it. But it was all done through just, elbow grease. You can't go to school and learn that stuff. Nobody's learning that in college. You just got to do the job.
But how did you maintain resilience through all of that? Is that just something you do, or did you have ways to build yourself back up after these
You have to. You surround yourself with people, and those people rely on you. They have the nice houses and cars and, you know, kids in college. And if you fall down, you can't get back up. You've now let them down. So the driving force is really for someone else. Because once you have financially everything in life you need or want, you can walk away, but you want others to join you. And that was the fun of it. So as a person, I'm eccentric. I mean, my style was taking 25, 30 people, whether it be to Las Vegas or San Juan, Puerto Rico, or, you know, San Diego, wherever we wanted to go for that year. It was all expenses paid. You know, we had suites at arenas that cost, you know, $500,000 or more a year, plus, plus, plus. So we were fun to work with. We were a fun company. And when you do those things, you have so much, you don't have a choice. You're so deep. Because really, until you sell, you really are financially well off because you're deep. So what the resilience is, it's called survival.
So when you got married and you had a child, or your wife had a child shortly thereafter, how old were you?
I was 18 and she was 16.
Are you still married?
Yes, 42 years later.
You know, I have a lot of respect for you because a lot of guys would have just walked away from that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what I was. I'm not going to, you know, coming out of high school, I wasn't the guy that was probably marriage material. But, you know, once you grow up together in it, it's kind of fun, like seeing you two work together. It's kind of fun. It's not the money anymore. I think it's more the fun. It's the excitement. So growing up with her was pretty much it. We were kids.
You
know, so, you know, going out and working 20 hours a day, or there was no cell phones back then. I'll see you tonight. Walking at 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. There's a lot of trust issues you have there. We've had one argument our entire marriage. One.
Well,
just one.
We've beat you on that score.
Now, that is what you need to teach people.
Yeah, just one. But we're fortunate. We're blessed. I don't, you know, you if you work hard, I believe things come to you. But just because you work hard doesn't mean it's going to happen. But at the same time, give it your all. And that's, a lot of people don't.
We were talking earlier about trust, right? And so you've been through all of this stuff with people, like, trying to kill you. But you still have to be able to trust people to do business, right? So how do you figure that out? How do you set boundaries or guardrails to still trust people, but also, I guess, watch what you're doing?
Probably in the last 20 years in business, I allowed people into my life. Our parties at my house would be 500 or 600 people.
Wow.
Being out all the time with them. So I kind of shut them out. I changed course. Because people knew too much about me. They knew the cars I was driving or how I live or how my house is laid out. And so I kind of changed the way things were done and didn't let people get so close anymore. And then I pick and choose who I do business with. I mean, you can work with me or for me, but that doesn't mean you get to know me. And I think because of those threats and because of those things that occur, just kind of the reality of the situation is people typically are evil and everyone has an agenda, I believe. You know, when you meet somebody, they call you, hey, how you doing, Greg? They want something, most likely. And jealousy drives a lot of it. Jealousy drives a lot of that hatred and those threats. And, you know, it's...
Wow, so you've kind of paid a price for your success.
Oh, 100%. I laid out in the book. I didn't pull any punches whatsoever. I laid out the truth. I wanted to lay out a story about a kid that was poor, broke, made something of himself. Through hard work, never stole anything, never went to jail, never got in trouble, never did a drug, rarely drank, just stay focused, stay this, stay that. And then I just kind of took it to how. So this is what happened. And then the last maybe 100 pages tells you how to do it. How to work, sacrifice, what you have to do. If you want to sit on the couch and do TikTok videos, you probably aren't going to get wealthy. And, you know, people say, you know, money isn't everything. Well, the truth is, it is. It may not be, big money may not be everything, but you need money to survive. And if you have a child, I think you have a responsibility as a parent to provide for them, whether it be clothes or shoes or education or cars or whatever. That's what's wrong with the world, I think.
Well, it's hard to be happy if you don't have money. Right. Anyway, Scott Harris, do you have a question or comment?
I think it's fascinating. I mean, when you started out, has it shifted from where you started with trust to now when you start with maybe mistrust? Or were you always, you were in a business that was security-based, so it seems like you might be naturally mistrustful to begin with, and that's not good or bad, it's just what seems to me.
Yeah, when it comes to, like, customers, it's always trust each other. But when it comes to the people that actually run the business, don't allow them into your life. That was my mistake. I let too many people into my life. I was very open, whether it be, I was obvious, well, I still am. Cars, exotic cars, cars costing $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $2 million. And they're over here driving a 89 Buick. They're mad at me. Yeah. So I didn't realize that. You know, growing up, I was just very blessed. I thought I was young. I call it, it's more than just luck, but it's also a lot of luck. So I thought I could share with you how to do it, and I'll help you. I'll give you a job. I'll pay you six figures when the market bears $50,000 or something. I'll open the door for you. Well, most people are going to do something different with that money. All I did was want to build to the next level. And I did all this with ever a bank loan. I never got a bank loan. And that wasn't because I was that good. My credit was that bad.
So, you had to figure it out.
So I only had to grow as fast as I could afford to grow. So working for, you know, weeks or months without a paycheck was pretty normal in the beginning of time because it was more important for me to grow. I already had the business lined up. It was just a matter of whatever. So when I finished, I was in the top 25 security guard companies in the United States out of over 5,000.
Well, how did you eat if you didn't have a paycheck? How did you pay your rent and eat without a paycheck?
We bought cows. Friends of mine, we split a cow together. That'd be, you'd have, you know, in those days.
That's not uncommon in Michigan, by the way.
No, it's not uncommon. Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a meat locker.
Like a meat locker, basically. Yeah. You have a freezer in your garage, and you got beef, and that's how you live. There's no McDonald's. There's no restaurants or anything else. You had your meals, and that's what the kids ate, and they had their macaroni and cheese, and that was life.
But where did you even get the money to buy that? Did your parents help you? Or
no, I had
Because you were
help.
So young.
Yeah, I had no help. My parents.
Would you go mow lawns in the summer or something?
That's funny. I did do that. I also washed windows, mowed lawns, whatever it took.
Okay.
Because that job making $4 an hour wasn't ever. So we just, whatever corner you could cut. I mean, we clipped coupons and, you know, crazy stuff like that just to be able to, you know, buy one, get one free. I remember going to store calculators and, you know, you would exceed what you had in your pocket. So you had to put stuff back. Mm-hmm. And that's the way how you lived.
Yeah.
So I always say when you live there, it's kind of like once you taste steak, you always want steak. When you've been poor, you never want to go back there. So my driving force was just to, you know, have enough money to never worry again. And that's kind of where I sit back today. I'm 62 years old. I could retire today if I wanted to. I still have about 11 people in my camp that I care about. Mm-hmm. And I want to see those 11 get wealthy, and then I'll walk out. And I can do that probably in the next probably 3 years.
What about friends and family? Do you trust them?
Well, the problem with, I mean, it's unfortunately, family, they're turned off by you because when you come from a poor family and all of a sudden you have everything. I mean, I live in a very large home, 10,000 plus square foot. I have 45 plus cars. I have a house on the ocean. I have a lot of nice things. So when your poor family knows these things, they have no desire to deal with you. My father died when he was 48. My mom died at 59. My sister at 57. My brother at 50. That was it. Wow. And the outside family is just the relatives, the aunts, the uncles, and you know, grandparents obviously are gone. So, and they hate us. They don't like us because you know the kids are great. They're driving nice cars and all that. We're show offs, and we are. I'm not gonna, you know, it's because they didn't have anything. So when I got it, I was like, hey, look at me. It comes with other problems too. I mean, people look at you like you're a dope dealer or think you're doing something wrong and IRS gets into your business. And that's all covered in the book. You have to go through all the processes and audits with them and they verify your income. But I did some exceptional things. I mean, we talked a little bit in the hallway about the music business.
Right.
I mean, I took, you know, just an idea and turned it into a major record deal, worked with a major artist and made a ton of money off of it. And I tried it 3 or 4 more times and it didn't work out so well. So I got away from it. But I lived the life. I had a LA lifestyle for a number of years and those are great stories. That's how I was able to write a book and tell those stories because I want someone to sit back and go, if that guy with no education, with no support, no money, how do you do it? And that's what it's about. So it's kind of inspiration, it's know-how. I'm not that smart. I always tell people, I'm not, you know, if you put me against the average person, I'm not gonna, you know, I pass the IQ test higher than the next guy, but I know how to do business. I know about relationships. I know how to work hard. I know how to tell the truth. And if you do those things, then you're able to accomplish something, I think. And that's kind of what I did. And because so many people nowadays are so full of fluff. I mean, that's a negative to them.
Yeah.
So where in Michigan are you?
Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Okay. I do think the attitude towards wealth and stuff is a little different there than it would be out here on the East Coast. Because I think people on the East Coast are like okay with wealth more because so many people here have it. I think Michigan is more rural and more.
We were laughing and coming in this morning. We couldn't afford to live here. Although I have a lot of money, a lot of success, but man, our driver was telling us what some of these houses cost.
So well, I in New York, yeah.
I decided, well, you've got a real estate guy right here.
Yeah,
so.
He knows.
I was going to say, there's no better place to be wealthy. I was going to give you the other side because no one knows that apartment that you live in because from the street, you're just like everybody else. And I know people, billionaires, who you would never know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't wear it on their sleeve. And that kind of works here sometimes.
Oh, I bet. I can see it. I'm a victim of it. I mean, I'm a victim of my own showing off. It isn't like I feel sorry for myself, but I see what you're talking about exactly. Because if I had to do all over again, I'd have all this money. I'd still live in the trailer park. I'd probably own the trailer park, but no one would know it because it saves you a ton of money when you get into legal fees. When you get audited by the IRS, the legal fees are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Do you sometimes think having money is more hassle than it's worth?
No.
Good. I'm glad to hear you say that because I don't either.
I mean, honestly, the way you were talking there, it's like I don't really want this.
No, I love it. You know, life's too short not to have it. You can't take it with you, so it's not all that. But one thing I do for people, no matter who they are, I will absolutely give everybody the best advice I possibly can. Will help you get where you want to go. I find time for everybody, and that's kind of my style. I did it in Detroit. I went on to 13 other states too. And had the same success stories as far as the security guard business, but same concept, just taking it on the road and putting up offices and, you know, the brick and mortar and then servicing. And I made a lot of people a lot of money that listened to me. And I also saw a lot of people get the money and they're not responsible and they lose it for one reason or another. So no, I love money. I think everybody should love money. That's why we all do it. A lot of people are afraid to say that. A lot of people say, well, you know, I'm conservative. I'm doing this. I got my 401k and I got that.
Because they don't want to live under the same microscope that you do.
That's correct. No, you're
and
right.
So it's just a matter of how much are you going to put up with, right? And does have an effect, I think.
Yeah. Where do people get your book?
My website's gregweir.com or morethanjustluck.com.
Is it on Amazon?
It's not released yet. It will be on March 17th.
Oh, so we got a pre-copy.
You did.
Oh, I can hardly wait to read it. Wow. I want to read those last few pages about how I can do it.
Yeah. Always available, too. It's a lot of fun.
And after you figure it out, you can teach me. So. Well, this has been great. What a fantastic story and amazing insights. And so thank you very much.